Hey, welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We're riding into the rhetoric rodeo, man. Roping right-wing doggies and riding liberal bulls. Look at us. Cleaning up American discourse, one persuader at a time. That's what we're about, Jimmy.
Nice. I like that, dude. That's well-worded, my friend.
You know, almost like I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm Dr. Dan French, American rhetorician, escaped professor, stand-up comedian and comedy writer from Late Night in Hollywood. For jokes, follow us on Twitter at Rhetoric War. That's all I use Twitter for. It's just a joke platform. Here's some recent ones. Here's one for the art majors. What if Monet just had really bad eyesight? Yeah, you have to know. He's the one that wrote all those like ponds and like, is that a lily pad or a pot holder? I can't tell. Like it was all that obscure. Yeah, check out with the art majors. Good art joke. Be careful out there. I think someday Jesus is coming back to show up and take out all these fake Christians like Neo bending backwards in the Matrix. Jesus is coming for you. You know, live the word is the point. And I'm thinking maybe we should take the Greeks out of control, the pronunciation of Ero. Like they can't spell it. They can't say it. You don't know if it's gyro or gyro or Ero. You can't even mispronounce it correctly. I don't think the Greeks should be in charge of that. I think they've abdicated the responsibility. So this podcast is, we talk to conservatives, people from, I also do some liberals where I pull people out of what I would call more out there forms of politics. I talk to comedians about their politics. It was always super fun. We're going to do a lot of that today. And I talked to persuasion pros, see what I can learn that might help y'all. Go to rhetoricwarriors.com, sign up for one of our courses, like the master course in modern persuasion. $25 a course. Pretty good, Jimmy, right?
Hey, you know, in the quarantine, I don't blame anybody for doing anything. You know what I mean? Everybody's just trying to survive and make a living here. And of course, if they want to, you know, pay $25 to have someone persuade them, I think you would be the guy to go to.
I got a few ideas. So yeah, I guess today, you know, you are one of the great under the radar comedy career guys of all time. Like everybody in the comedy career in the comedy community and stand up knows you, loves you, like you're a top dude. Most of the country has never met Jimmy Schubert other than, you know, the times you flared up on TV and live performances for, you know, 20, 30 years, you crush it. You know, but you're one of those guys that's got all the talent, all the energy, and not the exposure.
Well, you know what the thing is, Dan?
That's Jimmy Schubert, everybody. This is Jimmy Two Shoes, Double Shoes Schubert.
Well, I appreciate it. Kind words indeed. But, you know, the thing is, I'm at this point in my life, I'm actually, you know, I just love being able to make a living doing something I love to do. And do I need that fucking praise from the industry? Fuck no, I don't need it. And furthermore, nor lots of times do you care, because if you're off people's radar, you can't get canceled. And believe me, today you know, you can cancel for fucking anything. You can cancel for a fucking tweet today. That's how fucking sensitive fucking people are.
Well, you send out better tweets. That's what those
don't we need.
People.
Don't we need? We need better tweets.
We won't cancel you.
We need a sarcasm font. That's what the fuck we need. We need a sarcasm font so people know you're fucking joking. Am I right? Let's get to work on that. So it's just a font that you go, oh, this must be a joke.
It is a tightrope these days. Like there's not much room on either side.
Well, because the dumbing down of America has been completed. You know, the staring at your TV and letting your TV tell you how to think and feel. You know, it's like, who should we be angry at today, TV? Tell me, oh great purveyors of knowledge. And here I can't think for myself. It's more than fucking, you know, little Johnny can't read. Little Johnny can't fucking think. He confuses thinking with feeling, and he's fine, can't take it. You know, people are fucking triggered today. And they're I mean,
we're not a thinking culture. America's not a thinking culture. We're a reacting culture. We're active. Like, that's our whole, like, if you look at all our stories and everything else, it's action heroes.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? They react before they know all the facts. It's an overreaction. It's not a fucking reaction. It's an overreaction to something when you don't have all the fucking facts. Let's rush to it. Let's get there before we know anything, and let's go. And I don't need facts. Facts are for fucking pussies. I just, let's condemn them and cancel them. because, you know, fucking.
You see, that's your thing, though. You're the ultimate overreactor. Like, you are so good at showing that emotion of, like, going at, like, how can you people be this way? Like, you communicate that better than anybody.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, you know, because I've seen friends of mine have been canceled, and I've watched other professional colleagues get canceled for, you know.
Like who? Who got canceled?
Well, fucking, you know, Louis C.K. is a good one. I mean, Louis C.K. can't work. They're not allowed to, he still works, but they're not allowed to advertise him on social media or anything.
And he definitely took a hit.
What's that?
He definitely took a hit, for sure.
Well, you know, the guy does 2 sold-out shows at the Beacon. You expect the guy to go home and jerk off by himself? I don't know. A small intimate gathering might be nice. I mean, what's the point of doing 2 sold-out shows if you can't get a couple people to come back to your room and jerk off in front of them? I'm kidding. I'm being fucking facetious. But seriously,
he deserved to be canceled?
Well, you know, I think they took great pride in fucking ripping him down. You know, that schadenfreude, the Germans have a word for it. I think people take great pleasure in ripping people off their perch now.
Well, he got unlucky, too. Like, he was right there with Cosby and Weinstein.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, let me tell you something.
All that.
You could lump him in with Cosby and fucking Harvey Weinstein is a fucking mistake. Those guys were fucking rapists. Louis C.K. jerked off in front of a couple people and people that could have left the fucking room at any time. I mean,
yeah, but he had a double sin. It wasn't just the jerking off, right?
Maybe the guy was just a jerk off. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe that's his fucking problem. He's a fucking.
You want to hear my idea about it? What I think they should have done instead of canceling him? I think it's just wherever he went, like, you could legally walk up and pull your dick out and jerk off in front of him. Like, everybody would jerk off in front of Louis.
Yeah, you like it. Your guy's eating his fettuccine Alfredo and some guy's fucking waxing his carrot right table side while he makes a fucking, you know, Caesar salad. You know, it's part of the. I know what you're saying.
He didn't deserve what he got, but he deserves something.
People make mistakes. Does that mean he should never be allowed to work again?
No, I don't think so at all.
Okay, that's the thing about today's culture. Is that you know, at the end of the day, on all this technology, there's a fucking human being. And, you know, and you don't feel connected to them because it's over technology. And why give a fuck in the old days? And I think you know this point I'm about to make is, you know, people forget, like, you're capable of getting punched in the face for your fucking opinion. Like, in the old days, people come into a bar, they would make their opinion known, someone would clock them and say your opinion's been noted and found wanting. And so, but in today's social media, people could say whatever they want to whoever they want because they're fucking on it. They got all this keyboard carriage in there. They don't. And at the same time, I think this technology is making us less human.
Well, yeah, and you can't have a conversation with hundreds of thousands or millions of people, you know, but you just can't do it. Like, you can't respond to all these attacks. You can't respond to all this reaction.
Well, lots of times you think it's one person you think it's like 40 people, but it's actually one person with 40 Twitter accounts. I mean, a lot of the cancel culture is that. I mean,
there's all sorts of technologies going on there.
Hey, listen, we're all getting fucking played by everybody. We're getting played by fucking everybody. You're getting played by everybody. The amount you are lied to from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to fucking sleep at night, it's ridiculous.
But not you, Jimmy. You tell the truth. Jimmy's a truth.
I'm a truth speaker, bro. I tell the truth. The truthy truth. No, I... Well, I got to tell you, I find it to be all ridiculous. I find I don't watch the fucking news. I don't read the news. I don't fucking care anymore. I just don't care. I care about? I care about living my life. I care about enjoying my life. I'm doing yoga 3 times a week. I get up probably another 3 days a week at like 5:30, go to walks on the beach and watch the sun come up.
Oh,
I'm filling my head with
the
beauty.
Beach. You're at the beach. Jimmy, bro, you're at the beach.
Yeah, bro. And I'm telling you, you know, I said this before. I talk about people's diet. A diet isn't just what you eat. It's what you see. It's what you read. It's the people you associate yourself with. I'm done, bro. I'm done getting played. I'm going to go live my life. I'm going to work on my jokes. I'm going to create my albums.
I think that's awesome. I think that is the solution. Like, and for people who don't know, like Jimmy lived in LA for what, 20 years?
23 years. Yeah, actually, I lived there for 8 when I was younger. I moved for a couple of years and I moved back. So yeah, but over about probably about 32 years overall.
Yeah, you know? And so you were like in the city, like that right there in Studio City. You were right in the middle of everything for 30 years, a high intensity pressure, you know, industry where you're constantly, you know, having to negotiate that and that lifestyle.
And you got auditions. It's another element.
It's endless, right? It's endless.
There's auditions, which is another level of pressure. You're writing sets. You're doing Last Comic Standing. You're doing some acting. I mean, it was all, you're competing with the best comedians in the country at the world famous Comedy Store, which was, you know, it was an amazing place for me. I mean, I just, that was my home.
Great. You were very successful there. But now take that and like the pandemic hits, and you were thinking about this anyway, and now you've moved to Delray Beach and you're doing yoga and you're going out and doing sets. That sounds
I did a joint last night called the Turtle Tavern, something I wouldn't usually do, but you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and I just want to work, man. I had to get out of California because I wanted to be able to live my fucking life. I'm not going down in the fetal position underneath my coffee table, you know, sucking on the end of a, you know, a small caliber weapon. I mean, I'm going to live my life. I'm not going
to. That's awesome, man.
You know, I just look, man, here's the thing, bro. Life's too short to care about any of it. It's all fucking bullshit. We're all getting played by everybody. I barely watch TV. I listen to music now. That's like fucking medicine. I do my yoga 3 times a week. I've been making healthy food. I'm living my best fucking life. I do walks on the beach. And at night I get out and I'm able to do stand-up comedy, make people laugh in this culture. It's what I love to do. And it's more important now than never. So how dare you say, you know, guys that do that are fucking non-essential. You know, I think it's important. I think it's more important now for us to look at ourselves, you know, and really, I mean, because we're all just getting played.
Well, there's no non-essential workers. Everything people do is, you know, it has an essence to it and an importance to it. And like the thing about like this, like, you know, you moving out and I think cutting off from, you know, everybody got to be, social media just appeared out of nowhere. And suddenly everybody was doing it and they act like it's natural. It's an incredibly unnatural environment and a very unhealthy environment. And
well, I think I've always picked said up this. On that.
You've moved out of it.
Yeah. Well, I've always said this. I mean, I think that, these are disguised as like, kind of like, you know, they're just data mining operations. I mean, that they just want your information. They want your data. They're collecting it. I think Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, they're all internet ghettos designed to eradicate original thought or idea. And so
they can have my information, man. Like,
yeah, but what I'm saying, yeah, but I know, but once you step out of line and you don't get in groupthink, like you said, you get attacked. And so it's not really, you're right. It's an incredibly natural thing. I think I have an interesting life. I think I'm an interesting human being, but I don't think I'm interesting enough that I have to weigh in on every single fucking topic every day, every time. I don't. I could give a fuck. You people want to go fight on social media with total strangers? Help yourselves. Life's too fucking short. Unplug, get the fuck out, go spend time with another human being, make some eye contact, reach out, fucking help people, discuss ideas and concepts. That's what makes us different than all the other species. We're so fucking dumb as a species. We're the only species that goes into the woods, cuts down trees, turns it into pulp, prints paper, and then writes, save the trees or the paper. You know, just stay out of the fucking woods, you know? We are becoming dumber and dumber and dumber, and we're getting desensitized to all this stuff. It's not normal.
And people, you know, it's not like it's been studied. It's not like we can compare this culture to other cultures.
Yeah, we don't make anything in this country anymore. We make TikTok videos. That's what we make now. We used to have industry here. We used to have things that we would, I mean, you know, but I think it's, you know, it is what it is. I will participate enough so that I can stay relevant in show business and continue to work. But that's it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I think that, like I said, coming up with a theory of how you want to participate in all that is.
Yes.
If you just let it determine and you're just constantly, you know, looking at like reacting to whatever comes your way, you're in trouble. You have to have a strong theory going into that of like for me, I don't accept any negative feedback online. I barely talk to anybody online. I post all the time, but I don't allow comments and I don't allow any negativity. Like I block everything.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, I and I agree with you. I think you are right. You block negativity, but I mean, why would I let some fucking douchebag? I don't fucking know. He lives in his parents' basement. He plays PlayStation and drinks Red Bull and fucking eats Doritos and watches Pornhub and beats off to his dick's orange. But he's going to make a judgment call on my life. I mean, are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah, you don't know person.
I got more fucking class and couth in my little fucking finger than you have in your entire body. I'm not allowing you to weigh in on my fucking life.
Well, and you said it earlier, like in a club, if somebody comes out of line at all and you're on stage, you know, and heckles at all, or even just interrupts at all, you're going to crush that person because it's in person. And you know how to reestablish the power relationships and communication. And in online, the power relationships are gone. Everybody feels like they're all lateral and they can all just weigh in on stuff. And that's not a healthy system. You need to be able to control who talks to you, how they talk to you. You know, you deserve that as a human being. You need to have that control.
Well, you know, I mean, we certainly learned a lot, like you said, and you're one of the smartest guys when it comes to this stuff. You have a great, you know, real keen insight, Dan, and you're absolutely right. You better have a plan going into it. If you don't do it well, hire somebody that does it well and take yourself out of the process. I mean, you know, I run my fucking IG, my Twitter, I run it like a freaking TV station. You get little clips, you get to promote my appearances, and that's it with the occasional joke.
I think that's great,
I mean, I have zero interest. I don't care what the guy I went to high school with, you know, in junior year, he shit himself. I don't really need him weighing in on my Facebook post. Hey, you know, I just don't.
Well, you're so good, like live, like you've been on stage doing live public communication. I don't know, 5,000-10,000 times. Nobody can do anything in that environment that you can't control.
Right? Yes, absolutely.
I've seen you crush you. You can crush a heckler like nobody's ever seen. Like, it's beautiful.
And I get a heckler match, and 2 weeks later, he's in therapy. Today, I'm going to try to say the comedian's name. You know, you reduce them to a quivering puddle of verbal abuse. And you know, I just, cool, well, you're stepping into my arena. I'm not going to let you fuck up my show because I think it's really selfish. You got a whole room full of people here and you want to dictate where the show goes. Fuck you. I've worked my ass on my act. I worked my ass off of my craft. I'm not letting you ruin the night for everybody else sitting around you. Fuck you.
Yeah, I'm stopping it dead in its fucking tracks. It is so fast. It is so brutal and so fast to see, you know, a great comic just deal with that instantly. Like, just slice that person up and it's gone.
I'll give you a look the first time. The second time, I'll give you another fucking look. The third time, I'm going to remove you from the audience with a little bit of verbal laser surgery, like a cancerous growth, and pull you out. And the rest of the audience will cheer for me while they fucking, as you walk out of the fucking building. That's how good at it I am, because I don't make it about me. I don't. I got six brothers. My dad was a homicide detective. I got one feeling and I fucking dare you to hurt it. What I do care about as a performer is everybody sitting around you that came out and paid the same money that you did. And then maybe this one couple hasn't been out in 2 years because they had a baby. They finally found a babysitter they could fucking trust. They go, yeah, we're going to have a great night of entertainment. But unfortunately, they sat right next to fucking you, loudmouth jerk off who can't fucking, who's had too much to drink and can't control himself. So that, you know, and then, it goes, then you just watch, just straight back into the seat. And I make it about the audience. And when I say that, it's not about me. It's about the audience. I care about the audience. And usually,
well, that's, you know, that's exactly like, if you look at the brand that I created here, Rhetoric Warriors, the reason why I called it Warriors is I want it to be aggressive because we've lost our gatekeepers on our communication. And in that environment, you're the gatekeeper, you know, and you're an ultimate strength in that environment. You know, like to protect that communication experience for everybody, it has to be done in a certain way. And if somebody challenges that, you crush them instantly because you care about everybody else. None of that is occurring in social media. Like Trump getting taken off Twitter was the first thing Twitter has ever done with that kind of stuff of saying, hey, we think that there's somebody who is a dangerous communicator. We're going to cut them out, you know, and it took for 4 years for that to happen. Now, you can disagree whether that's a good move or not, but it's at least somebody gatekeeping. you know, and that's not even, it's not the one you see in the social media.
I get, but it's more like a politically motivated gatekeeping. I mean, if the entire Ayatollah Khomeini and you can, you know, share pictures of, you know, children, and then, you know, their guidelines for what it is. It's like, I mean, you know,
I agree. It's totally, it's screwy. They don't have it down. They're not like you where you've got really, you know, a really clear vision of what's right and what's wrong in that environment.
I don't even get my news from Twitter. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. It's not even fucking news anymore. It's some fucking douchebag. You know what? What do you got to do to be considered an expert today? Put on a fucking tie. It's fucking. We're being. You know. I don't know. Maybe it was Andrew Jackson who said it. Is if you don't get involved in politics, you're destined to be governed by people that are dumber than you. I mean, I've never seen it more. It's more. I mean, we're being governed by fucking mentally encumbered fucking people that are way too fucking old. I mean, you know, fucking my mom's fucking Biden's age.
Oh my god, fuck, politics now is so old.
Nancy Pelosi's a fucking crazy old fucking twat. She gets all bad. She gets into grandpa's apple cider by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She's fucking shitbag. People are starving. She's bragging about her $28,000 refrigerator.
You've always had a thing about Pelosi. Why do you have such a thing about Pelosi?
Because I don't like any of them. I think they're all, look, here's the thing. Here's what I believe. I think the Democrats and the Republicans, it's just two sides of the same thing. You can't even tell the difference between the two. They've been fucking over the American class in this country for the last 30 fucking years. And if you think one side's better than the other, you're a fucking moron. They're both fucking out to enrich themselves and enrich their fucking friends. And it has nothing to do with you. If you think these people care about you, you don't have a sliver of gray matter.
Who do you vote for? If like you don't like the Republicans or Democrats, who do you vote for, Jimmy?
I'm out. I'm done. I don't care anymore.
You gotta vote, brother. You're an involved guy. I want to hear your perspective.
No, I'm not. I'm actually doing everything I can to get less involved. I don't think any of it. Look, they care. They're the ones only. Look, man. I mean, I love, you know, the whole election thing. One guy, they all spend millions and millions and millions of dollars convincing you that I'm not like the other guy. You know, and you realize after you get done all these carefully crafted commercials and the communications and the speeches and the back room handshakes and the behind the scenes alliances and a labyrinth of fucking money, you realize nobody of any substance is going to make it through the mire. You know, it's just
it's hard,
look,
that for
democracy's
sure.
Fucking tough, man. Most people don't give up. Most people are too busy. You know, we're trying to make life better for our children and ourselves and trying to fucking find a little slice of fucking happiness. And, you know, most people don't give a fuck. As long as I get a new car in 4 years, I got a new DVD player, I'm right with the latest technology. I got Maharaji with a 2-car garage out in the fucking cul-de-sac. I'm a fucking happy guy. I don't want to be involved in it. I mean, you know, like these politicians, they're the slimiest, scummiest fucking
okay
people.
So we agree politicians are a problem, right? So I think I think we all agree on that one. So like your family, you're from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
So I assume like most of you guys are pretty, you know, on the right, pretty like, you know, you don't like the liberal perspective on a lot of this stuff, I would guess. Most
well
of family
well I'll put it this way. I mean, I've had jobs since I'm 11 years old. I worked because I came from a family of 6 brothers, and my father was a homicide detective, my mother was a school teacher. So I had to contribute to helping out around the house. I was paying rent and board when I was 16. I mean, I had jobs. I'd give my mom like $40 a month for laundry and food. And, you know, usually we'd go through 4 gallons of milk. And so I was helping out a little bit here. As were all my brothers.
Yeah.
I believe that you should work for what you get. I believe, look, I don't know.
How could people argue that? How could you argue against?
I'll tell you a funny story. It's interesting. Last time, like, I think a couple times ago, I went back to see my parents and they picked me up at the airport. And my mom, she goes, oh, she just was, you know, she's sitting in the back seat. And she goes, Matt, she goes, you just left home when you were 18 and you never came back, you know. And she said it's so sad. But I said, Mom, you should be happy with that. You should love that I did that, because you instilled enough confidence. You love me and instilled enough confidence in me as a human being that I could go after my goals and I could go after my dreams. And so I went across the country by myself in a 69 Buick LeSabre, and I went to the Comedy Store, and I started as a doorman, and I worked my way up, knowing full well that I want to become a comedian, and working my way up, and made my fucking dream come true. So it's like, you know, I think, you know, America used to be a, like, it's like a place that you could do that now. And or certainly it was. I mean, now you have to deal with other things. You know, I mean, look at all the women that go to college.
Hey, Jimmy, are you talking through a mic or a lav or something? I can hear you brushing on something.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm sorry. I'm not brushing. It's the, it's my fan, probably. Okay. Is it, maybe that's what it is. Let me shut it down. Hold on. All right. How's that? Much yeah, better.
That's better. It sounded like there was a UFO landing somewhere.
I had that, you know, I just had a fan on. Circulate the air a little bit. But, you know, I just, I mean, you know, now we live in a different America. I mean, you got little girls trying to get a college scholarship that have to compete with the transgender athletes now. I think, I don't think that's.
Yeah. That one's a weird one. I, you know, that's that whole DNA.
I mean, look at the, just look at the numbers. One. I mean, what are we talking about? 3% of the population? I mean, less than that, probably even. I mean, I mean, I'm being generous by 3%, but it's like, I mean, I don't think it's fair to the girls. I mean, if you look, if you, you're all about women's power, that's not, it's not women's power.
Like I said, that one's tough, man. Cause like you see some of that and you're like, you know, how did you determine that? You know, they look at trying to look at genetics and things like that to determine whether somebody can compete as male or female.
I think Caitlyn,
appearance
I
doesn't work. You know?
I think Caitlyn Jenner did it so she could hit from the red tees in golf. I think she just wanted to add some distance.
You got to get an advantage golf. Where you can, you know.
You know, if you ever played golf, you need every advantage you can. I think it's worth it. I'm thinking about getting a sex change myself. I'm thinking about going from none to having some.
You're in Florida. Florida.
I'm gonna I'm gonna take the Food Channel's advice and just rest my meat for a while.
So you have a, you know, I think you do, like, you come from that kind of background. Your dad was a homicide detective. You're from Philadelphia. You know, and I think a lot of the country, you know, wants that idea of, hey, it's a simpler way of doing things. You work for what you get. Get out of my fucking way. Don't cancel me. Don't mess up my life. Just let me live my life. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why people vote for the right and Republicans is because they're much closer to that idea.
Well, why can't I agree with you. It's like, you know, at some point that Democratic Party went fucking way left. And, you know, I mean, Kennedy would be considered a Republican by today's standards. I mean, you know, if you think about these ideas, they used to be the party of the working class person. The Democrats did at one point.
Yeah, they did. Right.
And then they switched. I mean, you know, so look, the whole thing makes my skin crawl. That whole process makes my skin crawl. I don't even think they even give a fuck about people anymore. You know, I really just think it's like, it's going to be the FedEx United States of Bank of America. It's a, you know, they just can't wait to wrap their lips around the fat throbbing cock of corporate greed. These politicians, they go up there to enhance themselves and make their families rich and fuck you and fuck that you can't afford insulin. I don't care that it's $1,000. I'm changing it. I don't want it to be affordable for everyday working Americans. I mean, you know, made insulin.
It's a mess, man. Like I saw somebody post today about basically America has become a socialist corporate, like socialism for corporations.
Yeah.
So the laws and everything is set up to make corporations, you know, supported and safe and, you know, all this stuff. And everybody else is just, you know, trying to get up the walls of the castle.
Well, I got news for you, man. It's never going to change, bro. The system's broken.
Come on. We can change it. We can change it, Jimmy.
Well, you know what, bro? You go change it. I'm going to enjoy my life. I'm going to go. I don't give a fuck anymore.
I think you're doing something that actually will change it. I think living your life, you know, getting your head out of all that hornet's nest bullshit and living a good life where you're centered, you know, like when you're doing your yoga, nobody's fucking yelling at you from social media. You can orient yourself. You can be happy and you can have some centeredness to you. And I think that is what America needs.
Some balance. Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you, I mean, people say we live in a free country. Well, the only thing that ain't taxed or regulated in this country is masturbation. So you're free to go fuck yourself. All right. That's what you're free to do. I don't care. I don't fucking care anymore. I'd rather fucking give a homeless person like $10 or $15 in the street to help them get a meal or do something like help an old lady, like bring her groceries out to her car. To me, it's those little acts inside you to change it. And I'm like you. I fucking hate negativity. I'm such a positive. I would describe myself as being belligerently optimistic and about
that's,
everything.
That's exactly the Jimmy sandwich. Those are the two sides of the sandwich. Like hyper belligerence. You're the most, beautifully belligerent person, and I think that's what people love on stage is you're just an artist of belligerence. But, on the other side, you're a sweet guy. You have a sweet heart. You want good things for people,
I do. I root for my friends all the time. Look, man, I'm telling you, I'm one of those comics that root for my friends in comedy. I think their wins are my wins. If we're friends, I root for people all the time to make their fucking dreams come true because I know how incredibly difficult this is. It's like I was talking with Brian Callen. A couple of weeks ago, he came into West Palm Beach to do the improv.
He
kind of
got canceled, didn't he? Or at least brushed up on it.
Well, the thing is, you don't take into consideration this guy did 20 fucking years. I don't know what, I think the accusation was from 21 years ago. It's like, what took you so long to report it?
Yeah, it's a little
funky.
You
get to ruin someone's fucking life? Where's a police report? Where is there any evidence they don't need? Look, if he did it, he should be canceled. But I don't know. I know Brian, and I'd have a tough time believing it. Is he a dog? Fucking yeah, probably is a dog. But you just put yourself in bad situation after bad situation, and all that stuff comes back to bite you in the ass. I've never treated people like that, and I don't treat people like that. I encourage the youngest of comedians coming up, the male, female, black, white. I encourage. I'm gonna try to be a good ambassador of my art.
Yeah, who cares, right? If somebody's funny, I don't care if they've got if they're just a foot on stage, just a foot with a kazoo. I don't care.
Just a foot with a sandal on it, just doing its magic.
Be funny. If you're funny, I will give everything to somebody who's funny. I will give it up.
I'm always rooting for the guy on stage. Huh. I'm always rooting for the guy to make me laugh. Because it's like Carlin said, there's always some guy out there who probably has 5 minutes that just makes you laugh. You wish you had wrote. You root for those people. I'm a fan of anybody who makes me laugh. And I've been lucky enough to work with guys like Russell Peters, who is a fucking prince among men. I went to India before this pandemic hit. Russell took me to India. We did a bunch of shows over there.
I saw that on Facebook, man. That looked awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing, man. And you got to go with Russell Peters, one of the nicest fucking gentlemen in this fucking game.
It does seem like
he shared his culture really well. He shared his culture with you. He shared the food with you. You learned about his family, and then you're getting entertained 6,000 people at night. It was one of my favorite trips of all. And you get to meet his whole team, and they're all great people. And wow, I'm glad I got all those international gigs out of the way.
Tons of that. Talk about that a little bit, because you've been USO. Well, you've done everything.
We've done the Welfare, Morale, and Recreation. It's the WMR, which is a branch of the military that does shows. Went to Korea for 3 weeks. We did Armed Forces Entertainment, which is another wing of the entertainment thing. And then a couple. I went to Afghanistan on a DOD tour with Drew Carey. We had to fly almost 24 hours to get to the gig, and we're doing these shows on the backs of trucks under camouflage in somebody's forward operating base. Mathur-Lam, Camp Right, Asadabad, Jalalabad. We're literally coming in on a C-130. Like, you get to Doha, Qatar, which is in the Middle East, and then you fly on a C-130, which is a military workhorse plane. And as you come into Bagram Air Force Base, they do a combat landing where they kind of spin down, and it's really kind of, you're not in commercial air, you're sitting in netting. There's a SEAL team on the fucking plane, and these guys are used to it, but it does this spiral thing. Don't get me wrong, still better than Southwest. We come down in a spiral thing, and we had to wait to get our gear off because it was a SEAL team on the plane, and the SEAL team has to make sure they have all their gear first. You don't want to use the comedian's gear with the SEAL team's gear. They're in a situation, they reach in, they pull out a rubber chicken and a fucking unicycle. So they had to make sure that the SEAL team got their gear first. But it was magnificent. It was adventure travel, man. It was like, you're sleeping in a tent, and there's this goes off, you're instructed to run out into these cement bunkers with sandbags on them. You understand that? It was right across the way. I'm with Drew Carey and Steve Byrne and Dave Mordal and Pedro Hernandez. And we had this, like, you know, we did these shows. You're on an Alpha Class Chinook C-1 A-47 with the double propellers with an Apache Escort. And you're doing, you know, you're getting off the chopper. And one of the guys greets you, goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, we're the comedians. He goes, "Yeah, but what are you doing here? Like, you know, we must suck so bad they sent us to a fucking war zone." I go, "That's pretty funny." He goes, "You should have been here about this time yesterday. They were shelling us." I go, "That must suck." He goes, "Not really. They're not very good shots. Come on." And, you know, they lead you out of the shop. It was like, but it was like, you know.
That's awesome, man.
Then you're doing jokes for, like, these guys. You're doing jokes in the back of trucks. You're doing jokes at mess halls. And they are loving it because, I mean, these guys are all got M16s and standing there with them because they were just out on a mission and patrols. And so it's not, I mean, this is a real deal. You flew into a war zone to do comedy for people who put themselves in harm's way and for whatever, you know, and I always felt obligated to, like, go entertain those people because that's a tough spot to be in and just bring a little slice of life to them, you know. But I got to go to China. I did, like, 3 tours of China, Hong Kong, Singapore, Macau, doing, you know, I've been to Shanghai and Beijing and just doing all that kind of cool stuff. And I mean, you know, it's
that's amazing. You know, what, when you get good at a certain messaging format, you know, like stand up and where it can take you, like just how powerful it really is when you can put that stuff together.
Well, you know, the internet made the world smaller. And don't forget, I mean, we're talking about stand up comedy, which, much like jazz music, is a uniquely American art form. I mean, the way we do it. I mean, you could make an argument that it's the second oldest profession. You know, give me the hookers and then bring in the jester, you know, off with his head. You know, you could make, but really the way it's done in America, really going up about talking about things that happened in the news that day, that whole stuff started with Mort Saul, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s with Lenny Bruce and doing all that. That kind of went from this, like, this vaudeville or this thing to, like, to actually being able to make a living doing something like that. It's relatively kind of, you know, the way we do it in this country is a little different than they do it other places.
It is, for sure. Like when I go on Netflix and I try to watch, you know, guys from Europe or something like that doing stand-up, it feels, I don't know, it feels soft to me. Like it feels like,
yes,
you know, the jokes aren't, the punches aren't as crisp. They mug a lot more for their laughs. You know,
yeah, I think it's especially
you as a great example of it. It's like set the hook and then just punch, 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 you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, so a lot of the point I was getting to is that a lot of people around the world want to see how it's done by an American. And so you do a lot of, like, especially in China, there's these like 25,000 expats over there from like Canada and America and South Africa that speak English, Australia, that speak English, but there's really nothing for them to do there. So they brought over some American comedians, and obviously, you know, you get the trip out of it. I mean, you make a little bit of money, but certainly you get the trip out of it. I mean, I've been to Ireland. I've done a couple of festivals in Ireland with my entire family, which is like one of my favorite trips of all time. Played golf there, but I've also been to Israel and all through South America and all through Canada and North America, like probably 15, 20 times to travel around this country and see in different cities. And it really is, I mean, an education unto itself to be able to do it.
It's just fascinating to me. Like, you know, people outside of stand-up or outside of entertainment don't understand the inner workings of things like this. But again, you've written, you know, a few hours of really high potency stand-up comedy. You're awesome at delivering it. And it takes you to these places because people love the messaging so much. You know, it's such a high powered form of communication that they'll pay you. They'll fly you around the world to get your brand of it. That's pretty amazing.
No, it is. It's awesome. I mean, it's so funny because I've done a little bit of acting. It's interesting. Korea.
Yeah, you have. Come on.
Yeah. But I've been to Korea. I was in Korea in the beginning of March. I was there from the 2nd to the 9th. Because we had done a show called Drama World, which is actually on Netflix right now, but they put it on Viki, which is Asia's Netflix, which has 40 million subscribers. So a show that's a hit on Viki would be like, you know, I mean, there's just so many viewers, you know?
Right.
And so they decided to do a season 2 and they flew me over there like during the pandemic. And it was kind of weird. People go, you're going to Korea. You're crazy. You're crazy. I go, get the fuck. I'm not crazy. I wear a mask. I fucking got gloves. I put goggles on. We're good. What the fuck? I mean, you know, I'm not going to live my life scared. I mean, all of this, fuck. I got to tell you something, man. I'm not fucking doing it. And at this point, I'm ready for a fucking Chinese hooker from Wuhan province with nichi crotch and a runny nose to sneeze right in my fucking face. Let's get it over with. Let's fucking go. I mean, you talk to people who've had it. They said, it was a bad cold for 3 days. Don't get me wrong. Other people don't handle it as well. But I mean, I'm just not living my life scared. And if it means I'm going to die because I chose to live a certain way, then fucking so be it. But I'm going to live my fucking life. I don't think this is good for people's mental health.
No, for sure. It's definitely a complicated situation. So are you a non-masker?
No, I have a mask. I have a wear mask in my back pocket right now.
Okay.
I carry everywhere with it. I travel, I sanitize, I have wipes, and I have hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
That's fair.
A virus so deadly, you had to be tested to see if you had it. A virus so deadly, it killed the flu. It's so deadly, it killed the common cold.
It's so hard when you get something like this again. You know,
when I feel I like pandemic. COVID. I like my COVID like I like my women. 19 and easy to spread. You know what I'm saying? I'm kidding. These are jokes, Dan. Let's loosen up a little bit.
Let's loosen up. Come on now.
But you get
these complicated social situations like this, like a pandemic. We've never dealt with this. It's been 100 years since anything like this has really hit. And nobody knows what to do. And I think the masks are funny because it's the first time. It's the only thing other than driving that can physically show you people's different choices and how they do things. Like you hate people for the way they drive because you can see them drive, you know, and now they're masked.
And then you see them driving. You know what? When you see them driving in a car by themselves with a mask on. Yeah. That's a Biden voter right there.
Maybe there's a midget in the car. You don't know.
No, I got news for you, bro. I know that you always lean into this whole mask thing or fucking ugly people. You got a hooked nose. You got bad chiclets. You got a weak chin. Those people like you. You got pretty eyes. Now's your time to shine. Put that mask on. Lean into it. You just, the playing field's been, now's not the time to fall in love is what I'm saying. Because you don't know what's under that mask.
Well, the Middle Eastern, the burqa, they were ahead of their times, right? I mean,
I'm surprised the burqa hasn't caught on in this country. As long as men sit and wait for women to get fucking ready. You know, how do you just put the burqa on? We're going for pizza. I know I got to do my eyebrows. I'm not, my hair, my makeup's not good. So I can throw a burqa on. I'm surprised
that about that. That's like a good, that could be useful.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody burqa up.
Everybody burqa up. You know, you take care of two birds with one stone. I almost caused an international incident when I was in Afghanistan. I suggest that they move the eye hole down to here. And, I think everybody would have been a little happier is all I'm saying. I almost caused an international incident. Anyway.
Jimmy, come on.
I'm glad
you do what I call walking through the landmine in clown shoes, like walking through the minefield in clown shoes.
I fucking love that. I'm gonna pay you for that because I want that to be the name of my next album. Walking through the minefield of clown shoes, dude. That's fucking hilarious. And just to tell your listeners who we're dealing with here, Dan French is a fucking genius fucking writer who has a very unique ability to get inside a comedian's voice and head and write something that you could deliver, which is very rare in fucking comedy. And you helped me craft and work on my last fucking album, my last special. So fucking bravo to you, because I tell you, man, you're a fucking monster when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Much fun to get inside of somebody, you know, like you, has super strong character. Let that voice and that character echo around in your brain. It's so easy to write comedy.
Yeah, but you're so good at it. I mean, there's other people that write stuff for you, but it's just a bunch of, you're fucking point on. I mean, dude, when we were doing Last Comic Standing, you were helping me with a couple ideas. I mean, it was fucking awesome. And really, you know, it's amazing.
Well, that's when, you know, to me, like message construction, when you get into Hollywood and you see what's possible when you bring, you know, a team of pros together, you know, when you get all that synergy of people who are great at individual elements, like, you're a monster on stage and nobody, you know, would ever, like, the amount of power you bring to a performance You just can't find that anywhere else. You know, that's a rare talent. And so when you bring that in with great writing and a great club and, you know, all this stuff, it just, you know, the moment just explodes. And people don't understand that about like really good professional production. Everybody's great. And so by the time it gets to the viewer, you're seeing something that's just been made awesome by, you know, 15, 20, 100 different awesome people. And it's just,
yeah, especially late night, monologues. And you realize how much work goes into one of those late night monologues. I mean, you know, I don't know if you were a fan of Ferguson. I love that guy's late night monologue. I really did. I thought
I admired for what it was. It was different, you know?
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. It was different enough.
Yeah,
it was different enough. And it was, I really thought it was pretty authentic. So, I mean, just because you got, it was just trying to do something different with the late night monologue. But yeah, like you said,
Well, and I think that Scottish thing, like I said, the European, like some of it worked for me, some of it doesn't. And like he took over that show that I was there when he first started. I went over to Dennis Miller the week before he showed up. And yeah. So I'd worked with him for a week earlier on when he was auditioning for it. And it was pretty funny. Like, you know, again, he was hardcore Scottish in a lot of ways. He was an actor, but he hadn't really assimilated a lot of American culture. And I wrote a joke for him about, there was a joke, something about, I can't remember the setup, but the punchline was something about you wake up in the morning and crawl over your 400-pound wife to grab a warm Pabst Blue Ribbon off the countertop, the side table. And he was doing the joke live and he got caught on Pabst Blue Ribbon. He's like, "What's that?" And we're like, it's a redneck beer. He goes, "What's a redneck?" I'm like, he's like, "I'll just make it Guinness." I'm like, "No, it doesn't work, man. It doesn't work. You know, if you're in Georgia trying to, you know, drink a Guinness in the morning."
Yeah, exactly.
But he was great, man. He was a great interviewer and he was a really strong actor too. Like he stopped doing as many sketches, but he's a strong actor.
Well, I just thought, but you know, there was a, you know, I liked him. I'm just saying, I liked his late night monologue. I liked that he, you know, there was some things that he did that weren't necessarily funny, but had some messaging on point. He talked about his life,
yeah,
you know, when he was an alcoholic. I thought some of that stuff was really touching and moving. And it was also, and he also made it funny, was able to, and he was a good interviewer. So, yeah, but, you know, I just.
So let me ask you one other thing, Jimmy, like, you know, we sort of skirt around politics sometimes, and I'm not liberal and I'm not conservative. Like, I don't define myself that way. My whole thing is I want America to be fun. I vote for the funniest character. You know, whoever's running, I don't care. I don't care if they're corrupt. I don't care if I believe them. Who's going to make my life the most fun? It's kind of a comedian's party, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I'll vote for the person that's going to cause the least trouble, that's going to make my life easiest. And so, but, you know, in LA's strongly liberal. It's 80, 90% liberal, you know, that city. And working in that industry, you know, you see a lot of guys. I see like, what's his face? You know, he has a talk show from the right.
Nick DiPaolo. Yeah.
DiPaolo, you know, and hardcore, you know, right perspective. And he's super funny, great comic, but it must be hard, like coming from that perspective and working in LA.
Well, he never really liked LA. I mean, I don't think Nick ever really liked LA. He fucking hated it. Well, yeah, no, I know he did. I got him with my manager when he first got out there, but it just grated on his last fucking nerve. You know, I there's a lot of phoniness out there. Sure. Are you in the industry? Yeah. Like, people don't make fucking automobiles or canned foods. You're in the industry. You fucking pretend better than the next guy. So, you know, the industry, I thought it was like, you know, it's a lot of, yeah, it's gotta be tough for some people. I mean,
it's hard for hardcore, like, traditional.
But you know what,
like,
the other thing is too, it's like I noticed a lot of those people, and I've been put in this position where people actually ask me who I was going to vote for. And I always thought it was always a fucking trick question. There's a true story. When I was a little kid, I remember my grandparents came over to babysit us for a few minutes so that my mom and dad could go out to vote. And then my mom and dad came back, and my grandparents were going to go out to vote. And I said to my grandfather, he said, "Who are you voting for?" And he goes, "None of your business." And he walked out the door. And I went, wow, I didn't. Okay, I guess it's none of my business. But, you know, I never forgot that.
But why is that? Why is that a problem in America that we can't talk politics?
Well, because it seems to me the people who fucking cause the most fucking trouble in this country just can't seem to mind their own fucking business. Just mind, you know, do what you do and fucking let everybody else do what the fuck they do. Why is it a fucking problem? If they're not hurting somebody else, why do you give a fuck? Why do you got to stick your two cents in, fucking Karen? Nobody fucking gives a fuck. I mean, you know, these people, everybody's an expert on fucking virology now and infectious diseases. You're a fucking, you take your IQ with a fucking tire gauge. You can't find your car keys half the fucking time. I know you. I'm not going to fucking believe, you know, just because you want to. The part of the problem was you go, is this even true? Is this even, someone puts it, I go, is that even true? And
you don't know whether anything's true anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the
both
point.
Sides. So, like, you literally don't know.
Yeah, I know it's true. I know it's true. For me, in my heart, and for what's true for me in life. And I go about and live my life like that. I like to read books, and I like to read a book. I like to have it in my hand. I mean, I just, we've gotten so far away from really, you know.
Well, tell me a politician you like. Like, it doesn't have to be from now. Like who have you admired down through the years? Like,
well, there's a couple like, you're guys. Abraham,
I'm like, I would have voted for Lincoln. I would go for Lincoln right now.
I've admired Abraham Lincoln for many years. I've read tons of stories about Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. I liked Kennedy. I liked Eisenhower. I mean, you know, but it's like, you know, Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt was an interesting dude as well. But, you know,
yeah,
it's like,
he was,
like,
wasn't
you know,
he?
But I mean, look at the guys that wrote the fucking Declaration of Independence. Look at the guys who wrote the Constitution. I mean, you look at these guys perceived and thought about this so thoroughly. They were so fucking smart. The guys that wrote the Declaration of Independence. And then also you read that it's a fucking piece of literature. There was a lot of thought that went into this. And they had thought about every fucking possibility.
Yeah. Where are those guys now?
Where are those guys now? That's what the fuck I'm saying. Where are those guys? Where are all the smart people? Where are the people that actually care about the Republic? Where are the people that care about the Republic? I mean, you know, I just think that.
Well, and something I've wondered about too, like, you know, like the Kennedys for a long time, you know, there was a tradition in this country of very wealthy families, which were also socially involved. And they, you know, cared about, you know, the working class and the, you know, the fact that people could live in this country well and things like that. They weren't just out for the wealthy class. What happened to those people? Like the Bill Gates and the Bezos and these guys, they don't become political anymore. You know, they just kind of hide out and they like give money to Africa for malaria and things like that.
Yeah, but why would you? Look what they do to people that do come out. Look,
it doesn't matter. Like the Kennedys,
they go after you. They go after your family. They, I mean, why would you do it? The first off, the job don't pay shit. It's only $400,000 to $500,000 a year.
Well, you do it because of the moral reason for like.
Yeah, but is it worth it? Is it worth it to have your fucking life ruined because you wanted to?
They don't have to
help?
Run for politics, but like get involved. Like you don't have to be a perfect person to be involved in politics.
Yeah, no, I get it, but I mean, again, it's like you know, it's. I just think
wouldn't you like the Kennedys to still be active and like you would have a JFK?
Well, they are. Their offspring are. There's cousins and other stuff.
They're
run for that.
Yeah, they're nothing. They're not national level.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because the ideas now either have to be a Democratic idea or a Republican idea. I mean, these people aren't even smart enough to go, why don't we take the best ideas from your side, the best ideas from our side, and come up with the best solution for the constituency of America? Why don't we try to make people's lives in this country great? Why don't we focus on making our country so prosperous and great by itself? And then we could take in other people and immigrants and migrants if we wanted to after they were screened and went through a legal process. I mean,
Irish. You're stuck into this country.
No,
right?
I know. But I mean, you know, we were quarantined. We had had to get shots and everything like that. I mean, my relatives did. But we were escaping from a potato famine. I mean, there was no food. Millions of fucking Irish people died in the fucking streets. I mean, you know, it was engineered by the fucking English. Not the famine, but you know, they were, that was the only cash crop the Irish were allowed to grow. you know, so they were a million fucking, I'm amazed the Irish people fucking survived, because even after they came here, they were fucking ridiculously poor, and they were fucking, I mean, at one point, the African-American slave had more worth than a fucking Irish, than, I mean, how the 12,000, you can tell me how 1,200 fucking Irish people were murdered in fucking, Google the Irish slave trade. It's fucking notorious. It wasn't enough for some people to come over from the old country and beat up on the indigenous people that lived here. They wanted to bring some people from the old country to beat up on as well. I mean, if you think about it, really, that's actually the beginning of class warfare, because the Irish were working in slaves with the African-American slaves. Today, we lost three, sir. Did they escape? No, sunstroke. Okay, bring them inside. You know, because the Irish didn't do well in the sun. So that was, and that was really, you could track it back to the beginning of class warfare. That's when they took the slaves and brought them inside the house with the air conditioning.
That's awesome. Like when I think about politics, and I want to, you know, reset a little bit, because it is easy to kind of spin out on politics and say it's all corrupt, I don't want anything to do with it. If you go back to things like that, you're like, okay, well, let's look at the history of the Irish here. Because, you know, some of your friends, like, you run into Irish people all the time, but you don't ever really think of them closely as Irish. Like, I know you're Irish, but that's, you know.
What gave it away, the red hair or the milky white skin?
And I know you're from Philadelphia. But,
yeah, and, I mean, the sun could fucking kill me, bro. I'm in the high risk group for skin cancer. I got a tank where I get dipped in a vat of sunscreen before I can go out in public. I'm like the boy in the bubble. You know, but that's all. That must be all that privilege they're talking about, being able to walk out in the sun and get murdered by it.
But I don't think about, like, when I talk to you, I don't adjust, you know, because of that identity. I don't, you know, try to do an Irish brogue or come up with only Irish topics and things like that. And I think it's one of the problems, like, with race, is that, you know, when somebody's Black, it's such, or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or whatever is different than your ethnicity, it seems like such a dominant element that people adjust to it, instead of just treating them like everybody else in every other culture.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a friend of mine who was African American. He said when he was a teenager, he used to love the Clash, and he would put on, you know, Clash t-shirt.
Yeah.
And they would mock him because he wasn't doing what everybody else in the Black community was doing. He wasn't allowed to have his own identity. He was allowed to identify as part of their culture or not at all, not as an individual, not just because he liked the fucking Clash. And he told me.
Right.
And
that's what I like about, like, if I, one of the problems I have with conservative movements sometimes is I think they hold on too tightly to things in the past when there's so much possibility in the future. Like, intermixing cultures is awesome. I mean, like, it's like the blues and jazz and all these things that everybody gets to enjoy because we poached it from another culture.
Yeah. What's going to happen?
Great.
What's going to happen eventually is that, you know, Black and white people are going to have babies together, and we're going to have one caramel color group of people, and there will be no more racism. That's how we get rid of it. We just have just everybody's caramel. I could, believe me, I have to marry in the pigment. Look at my whiteness. There's no way. I mean, believe me, I want my children.
Pigment. So, you know, sex is the solution. Just have lots.
I want my
lots
children to enjoy a day at the beach. Is that so wrong? No. But yeah. Look, man, here's what, if you have hate in your heart, you have fucking hate in your heart. And I'm sorry. I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for all the people that get fucking angry at fucking comedians, because you must not really enjoy life very much, because you have to be intelligent to get the joke, and you have to be able to willing to laugh at things. And a lot of these people have just, they're so, you know, look, all that fucking hatred, you can have it. You can fucking have it and stick it up your ass. I don't live my life like that. I've helped so many fucking people throughout my fucking 30 years in comics, and the emails for them, helping them get booked, bringing them on the road with me, doing stuff like that, recommending them to my agents and helping people. And I don't live my life. I don't live in that world.
Well, and I think, you know, what you're talking about too, is like inside the stand-up community and the entertainment community, you have a life. You know, you have a character there, an identity, you have friends, people know you, you have a reputation. People know that you're like that. You have so many friends and so much positivity within stand-up. It's just amazing. You know, everybody, you mentioned Schubert, and they're like, hey, Schubert, you know, they'll, you know, show me your Schubert, right? They'll do their Schubert impression.
Yeah, everybody has an impression of me.
You know, and inside that community, you've done such great work over such a long time that, you know, you've established a moral character and an identity and a value to everybody.
You know,
you
because
go outside of that, nobody knows you, you know, and they start judging you, and you're like, hey, you know, this is, you're not right. but everybody inside the community wouldn't know how to judge you. It's just when we go outside, like in social media and things like that, that we lose all that foundation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I've had so many help from so many people over the years that have reached out and kind of guided me and my joke writing ability and worked with me. I've always feel obligated to do the same thing for others as they come up or they come down the pike or they need a little advice. And so, yeah, but you're right. Most people wouldn't know that you do those things. And nor do I fucking, you know, I don't want to get a cramp patting myself on the back either.
Well, I understand that, but they should know that because we have to make judgments about other people all the time. And we should make good judgments. Like people.
Well, you know, it's funny.
I know you. I've been friends with you for a long time and I've watched the way you live. And I know you do these things for people. So I have a judgment of you. And I think it's somewhat accurate. Other people meet you for 2 minutes, hear a joke and like, oh, I'm going to judge this guy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I just feel bad for those people. I feel sorry for them. I don't get mad at them. I just feel sorry for them. I mean, your life must be so fucking empty. I mean, dude, I wake up in the morning and hit the ground. I'm so happy. I'm just happy that I really do live in a place of gratitude that I can't believe I've been able to make a living and a career and a life for the last 30 fucking years, being able to do something I love to do. I mean, it feeds my fucking soul that I can make people laugh. I mean, I was doing this the Turtle Tavern last night and was crushing it. And it was giving me such pleasure because there are these people, these older folks in there, and they're just fucking having a blast. And I was like,
man, they're not used to seeing that level of comedy at the Turtle Lounge.
No, but it was, but dude, it just brings me such joy. I mean, dude, it has to be one of my favorite sounds is a room full of people laughing over something you said or something you're presenting. And they're just fucking dying. And you see them going this.
Well, it's pure, right? It's just human. It's like, you don't have to complicate it bigger than that.
I mean, it's funny.
I don't want to hear about your sensitivities. Like, it's pure just laughter. That's why we're here, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, believe me, and to do it at a level, it's fucking healing. It's almost today when you do stand up now, it's become like you're doing a mitzvah for people because they didn't realize how much, you know, they missed it being isolated and being kept down. So it seems like, you know, people are just like, they're even more appreciative now than they were before because it's not something they go, I haven't seen a comedy show. Like, God,
I like it. You know, you're a comedy priest, Jimmy. That's what it is.
A comedy priest.
Yeah. You're out there just benedicting, you know, the people. You're out there giving them comedy blessings.
Well, you know what? I think
we should dress you up, you know, as a priest and do your act as a priest, you know, and then I think that's when people will finally understand what Jimmy's trying to bring to the moment.
Is that hilarious? That might fucking launch my career. Holy Christ.
Get your big Pope hat. Come on.
No, just a fucking white collar. Hey, this guy's a priest. He just transferred down here to St. Catherine's of Siena Rectory. He's going to come up and do a couple minutes. You know,
man, that'd be awesome. We got to do that. Come on. At least
and just videotape the audience react. This guy's a fucking priest. Holy shit.
Boy, I'll write you a backstory. We'll talk about, you know, where your parish was and what happened. And
we'll come up with a backstory. It's so funny, man. I'm just happier here, man. For some reason, because of all this stuff, LA is a ghost town. And boy, it didn't take long for people to leave, man. I mean, Joey Diaz left
when the money goes away,
Wolf,
you can't pay for those.
Josh Wolf.
You can't pay for those places. So you got to do something.
Yeah, Josh Wolf and Steve Byrne and fucking Theo Von all went to freaking Nashville. And Joe Rogan and Tony Hinchcliffe and Brian Redband all and Jason Rouse went to Austin. I mean, it's really like there's a whole shift in this industry. And it may be a good thing, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this has been super fun, man. I knew it would be.
Dude, I miss you, Frenchie, man. I know you're doing stuff, but you know, we gotta get together and do some writing, man. I gotta work on a, you know, come up with some fun pandemic stuff to do.
Yeah, you gotta write a liturgy. You know, come on,
dude. I say, you people, you ever drink coffee all day and then sneeze in your mask? That's the new shit in your pants. Like, can't wear this thing anymore. I mean, it's horrible that we've all been reduced to wearing masks. But the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. All right, my friend.
All right, live long and prosper. Jimmy. Super fun.
Yeah, man. We'll talk soon, Dan. Great talking with you.
Yep. Peace.